Hello, my audio boo friends. Gee, I just realized I was just going over my audio boos. Let me go out back here. I was just going over my audio boos, and I haven't kind of caught you up on what's happened in the last few months. The last audio boo I did, I was telling you that my husband was coming home. And actually, he did come home, and I had a hospital bed set up for him in the living room. And after one day, I realized that the hospital was right, that he probably would need to have a feeding tube placed in his stomach. So that night, actually, he went back to the hospital, stayed there for about 3 days, had a feeding tube put in, and just so he could build up his strength. Because what happens sometimes after you have a stroke, you forget how to swallow. And so pretty much he was starving to death all the time in the hospital, really. He didn't really eat that much. And I stayed right by his side all the time in the hospital. I was the one giving him food and even cleaning him up most of the time, because I found out that, and maybe you shouldn't know this, but there are wonderful, fantastic, beautiful, kind, generous nurses in our world. And then there are a couple, just a couple, who really don't like their job, who just want to get it done, who have now turned and gone to the other side. I swear, it's sort of like a Star Wars thing. They've had enough of this job. They get tired of catering to people, and they're just kind of mean. There's no other word for it. It's just that they're mean and rough. I found myself protecting him while we went through this. I sat right by his side. I caught a couple nurses being mean to him. I mean, I don't even think I want to tell you that story, but it was a frightening thing for me. 99.9% of the people that worked in that hospital were wonderful. But there was the two nurses, nurses' aides, not even nurses, that shouldn't have been in this business. They need to get out of the business because they were so mean. But let's just go on past that, because I've already kind of gotten over that. And I did my job protecting him. You need an advocate. I'm telling you, this is a lesson in life. You need an advocate. When you get sick, you should have someone who will stay by your side. Not everyone, and most not everyone, will not take care of their mother or their father or their husband like I did. I know that. People are busy. They're working. They have a life to leave. They're raising their kids. So they put their loved one in a nursing home. And that's just all you can do in some situations. Well, guess what? I was here able to take care of him, and so I did. Since I closed my business in 2002, I was able to be right by his side every minute. And there was no reason I couldn't have him in the living room with in front of the big screen TV in a hospital bed and taking care of him. I mean, totally taking care of him. I was a respiratory therapist when I was young, when I was 5 years old. No, five. For 5 years when I was in my 20s. Not when I was 5 years old. But when I was in my 20s, I was a respiratory therapist, so I understood about taking care and being a good nurse, and I loved it. But I just went on to getting my teaching credentials for computers, because I also got started in computers back in the late 70s when the Apple first came out. But that's another whole story. Anyway, see, I digress. Anyway, I just wanted to tell you that then he came home. And then we had home health, because they had found this cancer drug that actually I saw started to work. It came after he had a stroke, however. And so this cancer drug called Zelbroth, something like that, Zelbroth, actually started to reduce the tumors. But the tumors that he had all over him in all of his lymph nodes, because it was a melanoma cancer, that was one thing. The medicine only prolongs your life. So if you had a stroke and you're not, you know, quite there anyway, and also this medicine can make you have a severe rash, which had beautiful skin. I mean, for being 83 years old, he had some beautiful skin. And he was already miserable because the tumors had affected his right leg and kind of wrapped around his femur there. He had a hernia. We thought it was a hernia, but it was in his right lymph node in his groin area, which was about 10 centimeters big, which is pretty big by the time we got to a doctor. And it had affected his right hip and his right leg there. And you couldn't really see anything. It was all inside, you know. I mean, it's all inside. There was nothing except for that one, for the nodules that were in his lymph nodes. But anyway, he was just painful for him to turn and stuff. And so I was very gentle with him. I knew I could. It was hard on my body. I was physically pushed to the max. But you know what? I did it, and I'm very proud, and I got to be with him till the last moment when he passed away on Easter. He used to go in and out of kind of a conscious kind of thing, and I think some was due to the drugs and some was just due to the fluids, and it was hard to adjust it, but I was in charge of the medicine and everything. Finally, the drugs became an issue. I mean, did we want to continue the cancer drug or not? And so he never got the severe rash or anything, but there was a point where I realized that this was a losing battle, and to prolong his life in that state would not be what my husband would want. If you go to geezerart.com, you will see how wonderful, vibrant, sense of humor, and his paper mache art was awesome. I mean, I love his art. I loved his original way of thinking about art, using paper mache, a recyclable material, for Pete's sakes. I tried to get him to do some bronze, and I actually, years ago, he did some bronze statues, sculptures, and they turned out to be awesome. And I said, why don't you do it in bronze? He says, I like the feel of paper. I like the feel of paper. And it was a wonderful experience to watch him for our 47 years of marriage create paper mache masterpieces. You can see him at geezerart.com or genewolden.com, and you can see all of his things. It's a folksy kind of way of art, but every one of his pieces actually have a story to them. And I hope someday, 100 years from now, or 50 years from now, it would be nicer if it was 10 years from now, that his things would be on and the antique show. It's kind of like a goal of mine. It's like I want to preserve his art, because I think it's awesome. Personally, I just loved him, and I loved his creative way of being and his sense of humor. And that's probably what I missed the most, his sense of humor. But just to finish up the story, what happened was, you know, he would get better and then he would get worse. A couple days before Easter, I was really scared because he was having a hard time breathing. And as a respiratory therapist once, I think that is like the worst way to go. We gave up smoking years ago, thank God, because everyone else died in his family of lung cancer. But his lungs were clear when he died, because he gave up smoking in the 80s. And he had smoked Kools one after the other through the Korean War, and all up until one day when he just said, I quit. And he just quit, just like that. And we both quit. That was in the 80s. So his lungs recovered, and it wasn't a problem with his lungs. It was this melanoma cancer, which can come from anywhere. I don't know anywhere it comes from. But so a couple of days before Easter, he was having this serious breathing problem. I called the hospice people out. I decided to put him on hospice. I called the hospice people out. They were wonderful. And they would give me all kinds of medicine, the morphine and everything, and breathing treatments and just about anything you needed, any machines or drugs or anything you needed to make him comfortable. I didn't want to give him too much, and I didn't want to give him too little. I didn't want him to be any pain, but the pain wasn't the problem, I think. I mean, the pain wasn't the problem. The breathing became a problem because he couldn't swallow very good, and I don't know, his lungs were filling with fluid. That's what it was. Congestive heart failure. When you put him on a feeding tube and you give him water, it can become full of fluids, and then you have to readjust it. But that's kind of a technical thing. But anyway, I was so worried, and I called the hospice over several times, and I thought this was going to be it. And then the night before Easter, I couldn't believe it. I looked over there, and I always sat by his side and kissed him and just loved him and held his hand, and he talked wonderful to me. He was saying all the things that he never said in 47 years, I love you. I don't know where you learned to do this. This is so wonderful. You're like an angel. You're just, it's so good for you to be right here with me. And he would say wonderful things like that. And so I'm glad we had the last three months to be together really, really close. So the night before Easter, he kind of came out of all of that. And he said, let's go to bed early tonight. He says, we'd had a little talk, and he says, let's go to sleep. I'm kind of tired. And his breathing became okay. He was like okay breathing. It was amazing. So then I said, okay, so we get a good night's sleep. First time, because I used to get up every hour, practically on the hour, because of some kind of problem, this or that. And so we got a good night's sleep. We woke up at Easter, and some old friends of his, he worked 41 years at his job, some old friends of his came over and surrounded his bed, his hospital bed that he was in the living room, and just talked to him and told him how great a boss he was and how wonderful he was, and held his hand and joked with him and say, come on, Gene, you're going to have to get out of that bed so we can go beat up some old ladies, man talk. And it was just, it made me smile. I wish I had taken pictures of that, because I see it in my mind with the three people sitting around him and praising him and making him feel good, which I think everyone should do. Not after the person dies, but while they're alive. What's the point? I didn't even have a service, because the people that were important to me came to see him and visit him. And that was the important thing. And tell him before you die. What the point of people getting together afterwards? And I don't know. I didn't go for that whole thing. But for all the people that came to visit him, it was wonderful. Then in the afternoon, our son called from Tennessee and the grandbabies and their family over there, and they all called, and it was a wonderful visit. And he smiled and he waved, and then our other friends that were here called and smiled and waved. And in fact, I have the last wave he did on that day when he was waving at our friend Hilda, who was like a daughter to me. She said, hi, Gene, how you doing? He goes, well, hi, how are you? And then he waves at her, and he goes, hi, Hilda, and he waves, and it was like he was okay. I mean, you'd have to be here, I guess, to see the difference in him in that day. So finally, the day was done. It was a busy day. He was tired. I knew he was tired. So the evening came, and I had my couch right next to him in the living room, and we could watch the big screen TV there. And then, I laid on the couch, and both of us kind of fell asleep. And then later in the evening, I heard him say something. So I got up and went beside his bed and held his hand. I go, what's the matter? And he says, I had a bad dream. And I said, you had a bad dream? What was it about? And then he just kind of shook his head. And then I said, well, that's okay. I'll be right here. I says, just call me if you need me, and I'll be right here next to you, I'm right here by you. And so then I kind of went back to the couch and I went back to sleep. And then I thought, well, so then I heard him make some kind of sound again. So I went over by him and he was breathing kind of funny. I held his hand and I thought he was having another bad dream. So I kind of straightened him up on the bed a little bit, and he was taking some short breaths. And pretty soon he looked right at me and took like three big breaths while I had a hold of his hand. took 3 big breaths, and that was the end. But he was looking right at me. And it's good to be able to say the whole thing without crying. So that's why I waited so long to make this audiobook, because I thought I wouldn't be able to do it. So see how my voice changes? That's the worst part. The one thing he taught me was to have a sense of humor about life. Living with this man for 47 years, I discovered that if you have a sense of humor, you can pretty much get through anything. And we've been through a lot. But he did a sculpture of himself, and so that's what I have. In fact, I think I'll take a picture of that so you can see how awesome his artwork is. I'll put that on here. Of course, you can always go to GeneWolden.com or on the YouTube. It's Geezer Art, geezerart.com. We'll take you right to the YouTube channel, which he had made for a couple years. The last one he did is How I Made It to 80. But he actually had a birthday February 18th, and so he had just made it to 83. Okay, well, that's kind of catching you up. Anyway, he passed on Easter night, just before. Anyway, it was, if you have to go, I guess it was good for me. I guess if you have to go, just like falling down, just having a heart attack and never, like, just stop right that minute would be the best to go for the person dying. But for the person you're leaving behind, you know, maybe it's not so bad to suffer a little bit so they can kind of come to a closure. And I think that was a fine way to come to a closure. Of course, I didn't want him to go through any pain, but it sure did. It sure was wonderful for me to be with him and be his advocate. Because believe me, you need an advocate. I don't care what country you're in or where you are. You need an advocate. You got to go out and find yourself a loved one, a friend, a spouse, and talk about it. Talk about what's going to happen. Arrange everything ahead of time. Get an advance directive so if it's your spouse, you can really be in charge of your spouse, because they wanted to put him a million times. They asked me to put him in. He says, every one of them said he needs to go to a nursing home. You can't take care of him. You can't take care of him. I said, I can too take care of him. There's no reason I can't take care of him. What can you do there? You have like one nurse to 20 people. They're on a busy schedule. How can that possibly be better than just me and one patient? No way. No, they do that because of money, I think. There must be some money in it, because why would so many people want to get them in a nursing home? Of course there is. Anyway, so that is my final telling of the story, probably. Now I have it on audioboo. Oh my gosh, and I did it all in 11 minutes. Wouldn't it have been nice if it was that easy? It all started January 3rd when he found out he had melanoma, and right now it's May something, like 12th or 13th or 14th or something like that. That's after Mother's Day. It's like, what day is this? See, I'm kind of losing it. But anyway, okay, now for the next part. It's been a month and a half or so. And although I have been going through his art, some of it in a studio that I'd never even really seen back there, because he kind of had his own studio and kind of had it closed off and had it in the back. That was his art studio room. And so going through that is really hard. Going through all of these boxes that he had his art and art supplies in, and it's been tough going through that. So I can only do a little bit at a time. I think the worst part was he sat on the front patio and did his artwork. You can see those in the videos. He sat on the front patio and did his artwork for like 10 years on the front patio there. And he accumulated lots of brushes and tools. He made his own tools to make his art, paper mache art. And he had his own way. I always wanted to videotape him and have him tell the story of how he produced these, because it was a lifetime of learning all the little secrets and making a paper mache sculpture. And he learned every one of them the hard way. And he's just amazing. He'd take a little tiny piece of tissue paper with some Elmer's glue, and he would brush that very gently. It was so, he did it so lovingly and so slow. such an intense procedure to make one paper mache piece of art. But that was the hardest part, doing the front patio. It's cleaning the front patio and making the place kind of into what I want, which I have his art still everywhere. But in the front, I also like gardening, which he was never really into, plants and gardening. And so I want to fix up the front so it has a lot of flowers and things out there. And I just going through his art supplies and his handmade holders out of paper mache for the brushes and everything. It was just really hard. It took me quite a while to go through his things. Because what happens is you break down and cry, and then you get over it and you work your way through it. And sometimes it's more intense and sometimes it's not as long. The cry is not as long, but it's as deep, if you understand what I mean. It's a deep cry. But another thing I found out too is that the word heartache, heart attack, I was going to say, heartache. I actually was having like a chest pain because I was crying so much and crying so hard. And I looked up the word heartache on the internet. And the word heartache comes from heart aching. And you actually do, if you cry something like that, if it's so intense, your chest starts hurting like you're having a heartache. Isn't it funny that the word actually does mean heartache? That your chest is hurting. So I think that kind of just, I don't know, it kind of scared me. It's like I don't want to physically do bad things to my body. So I have to cry, I have to get it out, and then I have to move on. And that's the conclusion I have come to a month and a half after he's passed. So we'll see like 3 months from now if it's different. But I can tell you already I'm letting it work its way through me, and then I have to think about more important things like how am I going to survive? How am I going to survive now? I am lucky and blessed to have a house with a big yard. I have loved gardening. I've been so brain dead and retired after I had a business for an multimedia school, Walden Multimedia Institute, I had for 20 years, and it was a great school. I did good there. President and director of Walden Multimedia Institute. I was a businesswoman, I'm telling you, business, animations, did things for Anaheim, the Anaheim Convention Center, an architectural fly-through. I had great instructors. I'm on Facebook, I still talk to them. I had great, fantastic students who went on to do wonderful things. Roberta worked in the movie 2012. I'm so proud of that. And I don't know. I've been blessed, like I said, throughout my life. But now I have to come out of retirement, and I am now an entrepreneur again. So I have to figure out exactly what I'm going to do to supplement my income from Social Security. Since I love gardening, here I'm in the back right now. Here my little... It's a little windy out here. I love gardening. I think I want to do something with that. I'm going to do something with the computer because that's how I've made my money for a long time. Maybe get back into teaching a little bit. At 65 years old, because he was smart. He married someone 18 years younger than him. So by the time he got ready to be taken care of, I was still young enough to take care of him. That was good on his part. And And good on my part, too, that I could do that, because that's just what I love doing. I love taking care of them. Anyway, so now I'm an entrepreneur and I got to figure out what to do. So I think I'm going to end this with a idea that can help you get through the bad times. And this is all because of this simple little program. It's a mind mapping program called Inspiration. Now, a teacher invented this, and really it's for her kids to do. I mean, I think that's how it started. I think he developed this program, mind mapping program, to make it easy to mind map out like things that you learn in school, you know, your research and things like that. But I use it, and I used it to build my business, if you can believe that. This is how I used to be, because I'm graphically minded, so I can graphically build my, do what I need to do, put my thoughts on paper by using this mind mapping program. It's called Inspiration. And I think the newest one is Inspiration 9, which I just got. Well, I have on it the main topic, and from there you do like these bubbles, and you go, okay, multiple streams of income is what I have in the middle. And then now from there I'll make these bubbles, and I'll say, okay, I can have yard sales. I could go back into teaching. I could go into speaking. I could, because I did a lot of speaking back when I had my school. I remember being in front of 2,000 people, but I was kind of nervous, but I did good. I did okay. We actually had Toastmasters International in the school. It was part of the curriculum because I thought it was so important for people to be able to speak in order to improve their life, that it was a very important thing. And I think that's probably the best thing we taught in our school was the power of speech. Thanks to Toastmasters, who gave it, who really has it down. So if you want to learn to speak better, if you're shy, go to a Toastmasters meeting. They're all over the world, and you can stop being so shy and learn the techniques of getting up in front of someone and talking. In fact, maybe I should join a Toastmasters club again. I think I would approach it totally different than I did in my 40s when I first joined. In my 40s, I was gung-ho. I just knew everything. I was so smart. Now I'm 65, and I realize I don't know anything, and I'm not as smart as I thought I was, and I don't know the answers to everything. But I do know one thing, is that you can survive anything with a sense of humor, and I've done that. So, in conclusion, that's where I'm at right now. I'm out in the backyard. It's a beautiful day in Southern California. With the skies are blue. There's some clouds up there. My doggy Seismic, my German Shepherd dog Seismic, and Mikey are out here. And it's like 75 degrees with a slight breeze. You can hear the wind chimes once in a while. And I'm looking at my garden. My tomatoes are finally catching on and growing, and things are looking up. And I'm out here with Inspiration, and my main topic, the circle in the middle, is multiple streams of income, different ways of making money. And yard sales is on one of them, speaking, teaching, selling some of the things that we've accumulated throughout the years. You know, my husband and I bought us some watches, and he actually never wore the watch, so I started an eBay store called Frida's Store. That's a funny story too, because company name or whatever I start, like I had Frida's Hat, where I sold online one hat, just this one hat store. That's all it was. And I made some hat bands to go around it. Those were homemade, and I called it Frida's Hat. Well, if you do that in all small caps, it's Frida's Shat. No, Frida Shat. That bothered me to death, so I had to kind of give up on that one. I gave up on that one. I sold some hats, but I was never really, really trying that hard. And so I might bring that back up. But I have it kind of in my eBay store, Frida's Store. So it's Frida's, Freidas, and then Store, Store. And it's all one word, fridastore.com. Take you right to my eBay store. Now, when you do that all in lowers, and I tried to think this out ahead of time, but I messed up again. If you do it all in lower